We took the show on the road. We are here in Los Angeles with Brett Loudermilk and Adam Franklin.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. And as always, thanks to Between Dreams Clothing for helping make this possible. So head over to betweendreamsclothing.com and buy a shirt so that I can make some money to keep doing the podcast if you enjoy hearing this. Brett is an entertainer whose specialty is sword swallowing, and Adam is a filmmaker and director and producer. I'm here in Los Angeles where they both live, so I met up with them, got to share some stories, so here it is. Enjoy, and thanks again for listening.
I'm based here in LA. I travel around the world. I swallow swords, primarily just a 10-minute sword swallowing comedy act is what I do. Working on various projects. A couple of big things this year are coming up, and we're working on video stuff. Adam just did the Sleight of Mouth TV show.
Officially the segment producer. That was my title. I directed the segments, but because of union rules, I'm segment producer.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it's probably the hackiest question to start off with, but getting into sword swallowing, how does one start getting into that?
So there's nothing in my family really that would lead you to believe that I would become a sword swallower, really. I'd seen it in person and everything, and then I saw this guy on TV do it named Todd Robbins. Mm-hmm. And for some reason I got it in my head that I was going to look up his phone number and call him. And I did, and we started talking, and I told him that I wanted to learn how to swallow swords, and he decided that it would be a good idea to teach me over the phone when I was 15. So I was living in North Carolina, he was in New York City, and I was, talking to him and shoving coat hangers down my throat.
That's something, I feel like there's, I don't know what the word is, something around sword swallowing that there's so many people that, again, do it in a hacky way.
Yeah. There's a lot of terrible swallowers.
That definitely looked like it hit something. So what's your vibe on all that? I don't have a question. Just go.
So,
thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, like, I started and I was super smitten by Sideshow and the lure and the lore of it. It's such a cool, magical American thing. It's this wonderful part of history that isn't really talked about. And it affected everybody at one point. That was popular entertainment.
Yeah.
And, it's along the way, it's become forgotten. And when I discovered it, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I wanted to know everything about it and learn everything about all the people that were still alive. So that led me to start, like, cold calling all these old carnies and becoming their friends and hearing all their stories and absorbing all this information. And I had this romanticized version of what Sideshow was because I had never been in one.
Yeah.
And then I finally worked for a guy named Ward Hall, who is the king of the sideshows. He's this, very old man that has been doing it for a very, very, very long time. Since he was 14, he's been in sideshows. And he still has a show that tours around the United States. And when I was 18, I decided that I was going to tour with him. And it was awful. the amount of manual labor, the amount of shitty audience, like, just everything about it was nothing that I wanted from performing.
Right.
And that sort of set me on this path of like, oh God, what did I sign up for?
Yeah.
And then I worked for a company here in Los Angeles in Venice Beach, and I helped them, create what they've got and, like, help them build it up and all this stuff, and there was a TV show, and I got screwed over on that, and just I don't want to say everybody that I've met, because there's a lot of really great people in Sideshow. There's a lot of really fun, interesting performers, and there are a lot of good performers, but I don't know, I'm just kind of sick of it. You know, I'm sick of the presentational thing. I don't really know where I'm going with this. I guess to answer your... I went off on a tangent, but your original question was, like, why do I think there are so many bad...
Yeah.
So
something like that. Just about, I feel like that's... of. I mean, of course, there's hacky people in
everything, all of the everything. Variety. There are hacky office workers.
Right.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there are people that sit in cubicles with their, you know, their cat posters and their... you know, novelty calendars and stuff that are a caricature of somebody that works at an office is. So with sideshow stuff, with the sword swallowing and eating light bulbs and walking on broken glass and all that stuff, there's this macho attitude that I hate. Mm-hmm. It's, they're like these punk rock jocks that have sort of, taken control of what sideshow is now, and they're like, oh, look at me, look how fucking crazy I am, look at this shit, you know, I'm gonna do that, oh, look how gross I am, you know.
Yeah, right.
And that's not how you connect to an audience.
Yeah,
you alienate yourself, you alienate the audience, and people get behind that. People, you know, react, they go ooh and ah and scream when something's gross, but that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in making a connection and making it memorable and making it palatable and making money. You know,
yeah.
Like, that. It's it's a job. Like, I want to be as successful at it as I can. And doing what is the norm currently in sideshow, I couldn't make a living,
right.
You know? It's, I don't see that for myself.
Do you ever have a struggle of finding a balance between actually making money and, you know, you can both chime in on this. I think it's good to have a lot of ideas on this. Do you ever find it challenging to balance, like, what you want to be in a truly creative way and mm-hmm. how you just said to actually make money doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, trying to find a balance between being an artist and being a successful variety performer. You know, like, I get calls a lot because I'm a sword swallower.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Not because of my act. So I get hired specifically because I can shove a sword down my throat.
Yeah.
Which I hate. I hate that that's what's getting me the job.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because my act is so personality driven. It's not about swallowing swords. It's about how I interact with the person that I bring up on stage. It's about how I talk to the audience and the attitude that I have towards the sword swallowing. It's pretty terrible when you get hired to do a gig that's like ambiance, you know, like where you're just kind of walking around and swallowing swords as people walk by you, or breathing fire while people walk by you. It's sort of dehumanizing. Like, I feel like I'm not respected, and that I'm a prop, and that nobody cares, you know, nobody pays attention. So it's like, I would rather go to a gig and do my 10-minute act for 2,000 people at a corporate gala instead of doing the same thing 1,000 times for 3 hours for the same amount of people for the same amount of money,
yeah.
You know?
Let's hear a specific. What's a standout worst performance? Not that you've done, but worst setting, you know, worst situation that you've had to find yourself in.
I did an animation sort of gig, like ambiance stuff, at this really, really expensive private school here in Los Angeles. And like every celebrity's child goes to this school.
Mm-hmm.
Huge deal. I was in a Mardi Gras type Commedia outfit, which was already terrible.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing worse than like purple and green and gold together in a, like a floofy sort of crazy pants and a ruffle, you know, big pirate shirt. So I was wearing that, and I was supposed to, like, walk around and swallow swords, and these kids were terrible. I would equate it to, like, working at a bar mitzvah. Just these really entitled, shitty 13-year-olds, you know, that think they know everything. And I was doing it, and I'm walking around, and I'm trying to be as nice as I can. And then at one point, I looked at the guy that booked me, and I go, I'm done. And then just left.
Yeah.
I couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, he's a friend of mine, the guy that booked me, and he'll still joke about it, but he's never hired me for another ambiance job.
As you were saying that, I was going to ask if what's the breaking point when you say, no, I've had enough? Like, where is that line?
I think it's different, because I get into this cycle where, like, I'll be in a bad mood before a gig because I know that I'm going to hate it. So I go in hating it.
Yeah.
I don't go in with a positive attitude at all, which is not good.
Right.
Like, you shouldn't do that, but I do. And usually that works for me because my act, like when I'm doing my act, it's fairly aggressive, and I'm super disappointed in everything that they're doing, and like it just, that's where the comedy comes from. And a lot of times if I'm already mad, it helps. But I think it's different. I think it's like if I go in with a shitty attitude and just something immediately happens, it's like, oh, I'm already over it. Like I shot a commercial yesterday, 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was breathing fire outside. It was broad daylight, windy. And it's a one take single shot thing, so we're relying on all of these people, you know, 45 people working in harmony to create this single shot, and the wind is blowing, and I'm supposed to breathe fire, and you can't, you just can't. So the director came up to me and was really shitty, like right off the bat, and I wasn't happy being there already, and my only response to him was to stick out my hand and go, hi, I'm Brett, because he didn't know my name. He was referring to me as Fire Guy, you know, and then, it got better from there, because I handled it in a good way, I guess. I don't know, have you had experiences like that, Adam?
I don't know if my experiences really apply. I mean,
well, as a director,
let's hear a different side of it, kind of from the other side.
Yeah,
yeah. Like if I were if you were directing this commercial,
yeah,
and you,
I would want to know your name.
Yeah,
because I don't. You shouldn't. I mean, people do it, but you should never be like Fire Guy. You should never say that, because if you're in like a creative setting and everyone's there to like, you know, help you like create something, you know, you should have respect for people and make everyone feel comfortable and feel like they have like a part in it. And you know what I mean? And that's like when you get the best stuff out of people. But, you know, finding a balance between making a living and doing something that's like you're passionate about, at least from like a filmmaking quote unquote angle, it's, I think a lot of people have trouble being broke. I think a lot of people give up early on, like, doing what they want to do because they don't want to ever be poor. But I would say you kind of, like, if you want to be taken seriously and you really want to do it and do it right, well, you have to do it right. You have to be 100%, meaning you have to be broke for a little while. Unless you come from a rich family, or you have someone supporting you, or you get really lucky, which is, like, 1% of people, of the small percentage of people that really try. You know, you kind of have to be comfortable with, like, being poor for a little while. And, you know, I mean, to make ends meet, like, I remember I was editing scenes for a little kid's acting class where, like, I was, like, making money by editing kids that couldn't even, like, speak, you know, trying to, like, turn it into a scene. And then when I was finished with that, I would go back to working on a web series that I was doing for free that had actors like TJ Miller in it and, you know, Dana Gould and stuff like that, and, like, Carlos Alazraki.
And I was doing that for free, but it was like going to be the good thing. And it was going to be the thing that was going to be, that was going to, you know, help me out and like something that I really believed in, but I wasn't going to make any money at it. And you know, it's, yeah, I mean, it's hard to find a balance. I'd say there's no balance until something clicks and you can start making money, which you can only do if you go at it 100%.
Yeah, I think you have to have the means to afford to create a balance for yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because there have been, you know, more often now, I made a decision at the beginning of last year that I would say no a lot more.
Yeah.
And that was the best thing that I could have done. It, nothing makes me happier than to get a call for a job and say, nah, no. And not have to worry about it, you know?
Right.
Or get a call from a job and say, no, I'm not interested. And then they go, all right, well, what would make you interested? And I go, a lot more money than you're offering.
Yeah.
And then I get it. And then it happens, you know? And I would never have been able to do that before because I would have just said,
too scared not to lose it.
Yeah, I'll do that really exhausting long day for $200. Sure, because I need $200.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but it's good to, you know, luckily I had some really great gigs last year that like I'm still living off of, you know. Yeah, it's afforded me the luxury to be like, no, that's not a good fit for me. Yeah. Maybe I can give you a name of somebody else that would work for that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's like the ultimate goal where you can do one job like a month that pays for the rest of your month to go do what you want.
Yeah, it's the best.
And if you can actually manage to do that, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so few people, I think the interesting part about that is why so few people get there is because they don't say no. If you live in this world where you say yes to every $200 job, whatever your price range is, some people that's great, you know, that's the goal to whatever.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there are magicians in town that, you know, they'll charge like $250 or $300 a gig, but they're doing like 5 gigs a day.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me. Like these kid show magicians that are driving all day and they're doing their half hour show and, you know, making
nothing,
money.
Nothing wrong with that,
no,
by the
not
way.
At
I'm
all.
Sure some of them are probably listening and that's like,
it's amazing.
They're
like
probably making more money than I am.
Yeah. And but it's like, I'm really lazy.
Yeah.
So like, I don't want to drive, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't have the drive to do that.
Yeah.
Or else I mean, there's not that much call for sword swallower, but if I could, I would totally do that.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the, what I was getting into before is like that if you free yourself up to have the opportunity to say yes to the bigger jobs, whatever that means, you know, whether it means more money jobs or jobs that you actually want to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you're booked solid doing 5 kids parties every day, you're just not going to have the time or energy to do the good stuff.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and it's cool too, because like, you know, I'll do like, there's a debate about doing things for free. You know what I mean?
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah.
Because we're going into a lot of money stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's this debate about doing things for free. And, like, I'll do free gigs. Like, comedy shows, you don't get paid for stand-up comedy gigs, stuff like that, you know? Hardly ever. But, and if it is, it's like $40 or, you know, whatever it is. I just did a show recently with... Oh, that's Nugget barking right now. I just did a huge sold-out show here in town with really, really big-name comedians, and I killed it. It was one of the best shows I've done in a really long time. And, you know, I took $60 home. You know what I mean? It's just that's... But I wanted to do that. I wanted to be... Like, so there's this thing where it's like, okay, well, if I know the person asking me to do something and it's like a favor, of course I'll do it. Like favors are worth a lot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like I trade my act for other things, you know? If I don't need $60, I'll be like, "Oh, well then don't even pay me. I'll do the thing and then, you know, you'll owe me one."
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's way more valuable.
Right.
So you just pick and choose.
Yeah, I've...
There's an appropriateness to doing a free job or a really low-paying job.
I see... So, especially lately on the, you know, Facebook or whatever forums and stuff, you see performers, like, going on there and basically just bitching about people lowering their price. Oh, don't work for under this amount of dollars. Like, it's ruining it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's ruining it for you if you're playing in their world. Like, I'm always like, if you're so much better and you're charging five times as much, like, you're not even in that same game.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are you worried about? Like, if, you know, whatever the number is, if these people are, like, undercutting and doing birthday party shows for really cheap, and you're, like, complaining about that, like, don't do birthday party shows, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it's like, it makes me, I'm just like, who cares? Do it. If you want to go perform for free every day, go ahead. It's not going to affect me.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I'm not like in the market that most sideshow people are in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do high end events and parties for really big name people. And like, it's great. Cause you know, I live in LA and there's a lot of that. And that's what I'm after, and that's how I've packaged myself. I mean, I don't even have a website. Like, I don't, like, I am the worst person to, like, talk about, like, well, this is how you sell yourself. Because I don't know how to sell myself. I just, word of mouth is all I've really had ever. And it's worked out.
Yeah, that's crazy to not have a website. Why don't you have a website?
Because I'm lazy.
I don't have a website either, or a card, or anything like that.
I have had cards in the past.
Yeah.
And I don't think any time I ever had cards, I was even working.
I'm a strong anti-business card person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's like, oh, here's my... like. No one has, when I did have business cards or anything, no one has ever called me like, oh, I had your business card.
Yeah.
But I do have a website. So.
Yeah, so you have a website. I'm super active on social media, like Facebook, like I'm on it 24/7. Facebook's my job, essentially. Yeah. That's how I treat it. And Instagram. Facebook and Instagram is all that I do. And that seems to be enough. Now, at the recording of this, I am building a website. I am working on a website. I just had like a cool photo shoot and stuff, and like I'm trying to better myself, you know.
Good. Well, yeah. that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So we kind of talked a lot about how terrible performing is and the terribleness of it. So why don't both of you guys jump in with one of something that you was just like too good to be not too good to be true, but like something that you're like, this is why, you know, you initially said how you started doing something like, this is not what I signed up for.
Right.
So let's hear a story about this is everything I thought it was going to be and more.
Okay.
When you showed up and it just all came together. You know, sometimes things just work.
Yeah. Adam, do you have one? All right, you think about yours.
Yeah.
Last year, I had come home from performing for a month in Dubai, and it was a crazy gig. I performed for the King of Nigeria.
Hmm.
You know, I got custom-made clothing while I was in Dubai, but I came home, and I had, like, $400. That's all I had. And like rent is due.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's going on? What am I going to do? I have nothing for the rest of the year. There's nothing on my plate. So Adam and I, we're roommates for those of you listening. Mm-hmm. We decided that we'd go to Vegas because it's, you know, 4 hours away. I'd stay with some friends, and we'd go see a couple shows, just so that, like, I could, like, go to a different place and, yeah. and not really think about having nothing. So, we went to go see the Mack King show in Vegas, and Mack wasn't in town. It was my friend Derek Hughes, who was covering for Mack, and he had tickets to this show called Vegas Nocturne that night, mm-hmm. and he asked us if we wanted to go. So we said, yeah, absolutely. And we go, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the show, and I go, I have to be in this show. I have to be, my act would fit perfectly. My act is something that's missing from this show. The type of audience interaction that I provide needs to be here. And I found the director of the show that night, because I had some friends in the cast, and I talked to the director, and I was like, look, I don't know what we got to do, but you need to see my act. I need to audition for you. What can we do? And we set up an audition the following week in the at the venue, and I auditioned, and they were basically like, all right, you're hired. And then I had the best job I've ever had, and it's the best job I'm going to have for a long time. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was a dream gig. The money was excellent. It was 4 days a week. I was performing for great audiences. I was in the biggest budgeted variety show of all time. And I was with the most talented cast ever. These were all variety stars.
Yeah.
You know? And everyone loved each other. Like, it was, there was no person in the cast that had a problem with anybody else. We all got along. We were this big, happy family. And then the show closed 5 months after I was in it. And then it was like, oh, well,
back to reality, back to
living in LA full time. But it was great, because, like, I was flying on a fucking private airline back and forth from Vegas to LA. You know, because it was, I would go 4 days in Vegas, 3 days in LA. So, like, sometimes I'd fly in on this, like, 8-seater propeller plane. and it was amazing. You know, there's no TSA. You know, you just walk into the hangar and you walk right on the plane and then you go. Or I would drive and I'd be here for 3 days and just relax and not have to deal with Vegas. And then I'd go back and work, and it was amazing. You know, it was really great to say, have somebody say, you are a valuable artist, like, you do something that's really wonderful, and I want to pay you what you're worth, or more than you're worth, you know what I mean? and it felt amazing. And then later on last year, I got to work with Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and that was amazing. That was a lot of fun. And, yeah, you know, so last year was really good. It was so far the highlight of everything that I've done. And that's what I want to do. I want to do more shows like that. All right, now it's your turn.
Yeah, I guess, I could talk about my last project, a few days ago, or I don't know when this is going to air, but when you're going to put this up. But on April 6th, you know, I produced and directed for a magic special on Comedy Central for Justin Willman called Sleight of Mouth. And that was one of the coolest things I've ever done, because I love magic and I love comedy. And it was like a dream job to have for me. And that came about in the strangest way, because I got into directing magic by starting a horrorcore hip-hop group called Abracadabra, where we played these dead magicians that came back from the dead and have, like, this, like, murderous magic show we travel around with. And we just made, you know, like, stupid music videos and put them online. And we actually got a call from Psychopathic Records, Insane Clown Posse's label. And they were like, dude, we love this. You guys got to come to the Gathering of the Juggalos. So, like, they bought us plane tickets and we flew up to Ohio and played the 2014 Gathering of the Juggalos and went on stage with ICP, throwing Faygo at the crowd and hanging out with Tech N9ne. And, you know, and, like, that was pretty cool. Anyway, so from doing that, you know, some magicians that I had met at a dinner party, you know, saw that and they were like, oh, dude, we should work together. We should do some stuff. So I was like, all right. And, you know, we made, I worked with this magician, James Galea, and we made this short, sort of like a music video, short film for him called The Magician. And we shot that at this, magic venue called Brookledge, which is like, it's like
my former home. And I'm also in
Brett's
the video.
Former home. And Brett's in the video. And that was like when we kind of, that was one of the first times we ever hung out, really.
That was the first time we worked together.
Yeah. And I did that. And then Justin Willman gave me a call and was like, hey, you want to like do some, you know, fun like online videos with me, with Nerdist? And I was like, sure. And we did a sketch where he goes on a date. He meets his girlfriend for lunch. And she tries to get him to reveal how he does his magic tricks, and it turns into this whole like, well, it, you know, like, you know, like you can't keep secrets from me if I can keep secrets from you, and then we did this other thing with these little kids. We did a kids where kids talk magic. He goes to like a school and he talks to little kids, and it's super funny. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, almost like a month after that, he was in talks to do the Comedy Central special, and like I had just worked with him. And so I was right there for when that all happened. And, he, you know, I got a call to go down to the studio and meet with, like, all the executives. And they just asked me to come onto the project. And that was, like, surreal for me. Like, just to think, like, I was just doing some fun stuff with people for free.
Yeah.
Just doing it on, you know, fun things online, just things we liked. And it turned into something huge and something that, you know, like, I'm really proud of.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it happened.
Yeah.
And then it happened.
Yeah, that was, it was a fun experience. I worked on the special for a little bit, and it was a very, very cool thing.
Yeah.
Very cool thing.
Yeah, you know, while we were in pre-production on it, we were considering doing psychic surgery to people.
Which, for those of you that don't know, is it's basically a Filipino thing, but a person lays on a table, they've got a tumor or something, or there's something ailing them. And the faith healer plunges their bare hand into their stomach, and blood pours out. And then they remove, you know, pieces of bacon and things that look like tumors. And then they wipe away the blood, and they're totally fine.
Yeah.
So we were gonna do this.
Yeah. So yeah, we were gonna do it for the special, and we had Brett come in to sort of like show us how it's done. And he put out a table, and we got one of the writers, Harrison Greenbaum, to take his shirt off and lay down on the table. He went down underwear, and he lays down on the table, and we've got the entire, you know, production staff there, all the writers and
the producers,
Robert Morton's there, and Justin's there, and like we're all standing around.
And I go, all right, here we go. And I plunge my hand into his stomach, and blood shoots everywhere.
Explodes. All over
the walls.
All over the walls.
And pretty much everybody was wearing a white shirt.
Yeah.
Everybody that day decided to wear white of some kind.
It was just
kind.
Like in an office.
Yes.
At Comedy Central.
Yes. It was at a Comedy Central office. All the walls covered in blood spatter. Like
covered.
Down.
Covered.
All these people just sitting there with blood on their face, and everybody's stunned. Yeah. And Harrison is like, what's going on? You know? Because he can't see, because he's
very accurate Harrison impression, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, I mean, that was a lot of fun. It got cut.
It did get cut,
but it's, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
What else? Anything else?
So I know we have to wrap it up here. Any other cool things you guys want to touch on, or what we can look forward to coming up?
I'm doing two fairly large projects this year, but I can't talk about either of them, so it's pointless. So there you go about that one. Hey, I'm big shit, man. I just can't tell you why.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, literally everything is
everything's a secret.
Showbiz.
There is some cool stuff coming up, though.
There's some really cool stuff.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about
it. It's the coolest stuff that none of you can know about.
The coolest stuff, so we'll have to catch back up with you guys.
Yeah.
At some point, so you can talk about the new things that are happening.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool.
This was fun.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a wrap. Thanks, guys, for listening. If you guys are listening on iTunes, do me a huge favor and leave a rating and or a review. So that helps us out a real lot when we're doing these shows. And, of course, head over to BetweenDreamsClothing.com, pick up a shirt. And my brand new book, my first ever book, is coming out soon. Depending on when you're listening to this, it might be out already. If not, it will be out soon. And you can get some info on that at ChrisRuggiero.com. So check out ChrisRuggiero.com, see what I'm up to, and you'll be able to purchase the book there coming up soon, if not now. And that's it. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.